And welcome to the GEMS Report, brought to you by Clarion Events, Fire and Rescue Group, and the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. My name is Ted Lee, and I'm the editor-in-chief of GEMS Magazine. Along with Jeff Frankel, our managing editor, we will be bringing you experts and industry leaders to talk about subject matters of hot topics, things that have been written about in GEMS, the news, and all things that are impacting emergency medical services today. Today, we're very fortunate to have two guests with us who have written a recent article for us. Dr. David Green, Deputy Chief of Colleton Fire and Rescue, and the Chief Medical Officer, Joseph Campbell. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
So if we could start off with just a little bit of introduction of who you guys are and your background so that the audience gets a little feel for who you are.
Well, I'm Joseph Campbell. Friends call me Joey, and I am the chief medical officer, sort of the clinical manager, training officer for Colleton County Fire Rescue. I've been in fire and emergency medical services now for 28 years. 27 of those being a paramedic, and I've been with the fire rescue department since 2004 and served as primarily a field paramedic up until 2009, where I moved into training and have just progressed through there. So that's kind of my story.
I'm David Green. I'm the deputy chief with Colleton County Fire Rescue, and I've been in the fire service since 1991 and a paramedic since 2001, and currently over all the divisions within the fire rescue department. So operations, training, prevention, emergency management, all of that sort of supervise all of those divisions, and glad to be here with you all.
Well, thank you again for coming. We enjoyed having guests that are writing passionately about their department. So if you could give us a little bit of background about, you know, who is Colleton County Fire and Rescue?
So we're a rural all hazards combination department. It's kind of a unicorn, I guess. They're not a lot around, but our county's so big, it's over 1,100 square miles, and we have 36 fire stations. So our staff is 109 career folks and about 150 volunteers that they get a paper call stipend, but they're primarily volunteer personnel. And we run about 10,000 calls a year, a little over 10,000 calls a year. And as with most fire departments, the majority of those are emergency medical calls. So we do technical rescue as well. So all the hazardous materials. We have a type one hazmat team. We do confined space and technical rescue and water rescue. We have a dive team, and we do a lot with a little, I would say.
So. Like most rural departments, and it's interesting that you're a combo paid and a volunteer department as well. So where exactly are you located in South Carolina?
We are in the low country of South Carolina, and we are 75 miles from everywhere, to sort of put it bluntly. We are about an hour west of Charleston, about an hour and 20, 30 minutes south of Columbia, and then would be about an hour north of Savannah, Georgia, and about an hour and a half to 2 hours east of Augusta, Georgia. So we sit almost slap dab in the middle of the low country of South Carolina. And our county runs from basically the middle of the low country all the way down to the coast, and including Edisto Beach. So we take up a pretty large land mass. I think we're around the fourth largest county in the state. And we, you know, on top of all of the other things we do for the fire service, we're also the ALS 911 transport provider for the county. So.
That's so you do first response and transport.
Yes.
Correct. Do you have many local hospital resources, or are you in the middle of a kind of a desert to where you're transporting outside of your county quite a bit?
We have one hospital here, and they're a community hospital, and they do have some resources available, but they're not a trauma center. They don't have any, you know, they don't have a cath lab. They don't provide STEMI care. They do provide stroke care to some degree. They're a, what's the
acute stroke ready hospital as the designation, the state designation, as well as the ACS, but they are a community access hospital. And with minus STEMI, sepsis care and low level stroke care, all of our trauma patients, significant trauma patients, all of our STEMI patients go to facilities outside of Colleton County.
So, and then you mentioned, you know, just how far you are from those. So, you know, extended transports are kind of the norm for your group.
Correct. Our longest transport could be 45 minutes to an hour, depending on what part of the county is in, to down to about 35 minutes would be the closest out of county resource we would be able to access at the earliest time.
So that lends to, you know, kind of creative protocols and extensive protocols, seeing as your paramedics and EMTs and advanced EMTs stay with the patients for 35 to 45 minutes. That's a long time in a transport.
It is. And we pride ourselves on having some of the most diversified protocols in the state. And because there's several, you know, several mountains to climb, the remoteness of our area does not always lend to communications. Cell phone and radio service can be very limited in certain areas. So our providers have to be able to actually treat their patients. And our med control physician, Dr. Adam Mandel, has been wonderful and is confident enough in the providers to provide them with a set of protocols that are very extensive and allow for thinking in the field and actually allow for decision making in those situations where they don't have a physician that they can readily rely on because of communications considerations.
So along those lines, and to the article that you guys worked on, a new program or newish program has started with your department. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I'll just begin at, you know, at the beginning of it. Okay. We were in, Chief Green and myself were in the chief of the department's office, Chief Barry McRoy, one afternoon. And we were sitting in there, and to be honest, we were kind of just shooting the breeze, talking about some things operationally. And the chief piped up and said, "I want blood on an ambulance." And I can't remember for sure. I think Chief Green ran out of the room and ran back into his office again.
But I curled up in the fetal position. I think his point was that the aircraft around the area were, we have one here in Colleton, the Care Flight, and that's we partner with them. So we have contracted employees from the fire rescue department that work on there as the firefighter flight paramedics. And they had been carrying blood and we didn't have it on the trucks. And that was to his point, why the chief was asking, why can they carry it on the helicopter and we can't carry, we need it on the trucks. And that's where we started.
I think my initial response was that's nearly impossible. And for several times before, that topic has been broached at the state level and met resistance at certain levels in the state hierarchy. And no one as tenacious as we are really kind of took it on. So I called the bureau chief at the time, Robert Ronsky, and said, "This is what we want to do. I want to put a pilot together." And that's kind of where it began. About a week after that, and I would be remiss not to mention, Oconee County contacted DHEC and Department of Health and Environmental Control for South Carolina and Mr. Ronsky and said they would be interested in a pilot. So Rob, being the communicator that he is, put myself and Aaron Dix into contact with each other, and we were actually able to run a dual controlled pilot in South Carolina with Colleton County Fire Rescue carrying whole O positive blood, and then Oconee County, which is managed by Prisma Health, they carried component therapy, and we were actually able to extrapolate and contrast some data from that. That was, we began that around 2018, and in November of 2019, we received approval for the pilot after months and years of meetings, it seemed like. And everything was good to go. And we all know what happened officially, and both Oconee and ourselves were poised to the end of February, beginning of March 2020 to begin the pilot program. And we all know what happened in early March 2020. We just had that anniversary, that thing called COVID happened. And people quit traveling. There were all the restrictions out there. And the pilots initially did not gather enough data to be, I would say, respectful to making a decision. So we extended the pilot an additional year. And in that, we received enough data for the state to make the final determination that pre-hospital blood administration was not only possible logistically, but also on the level of clinically significant an improvement of patient outcomes. And in October of 2022, they approved it as a statewide protocol. So any department now with the proper logistical components can carry and administer blood products in South Carolina.
So as things often start, seems like in EMS, somebody's in the office and says, I want to do this. And then everybody scrambles around and tries to figure out, you know, how best to do it. But, you know, why we see the trend, and there's a lot of departments that are kind of jumping on the blood bandwagon. And, you know, there's tons of departments that are laying the groundwork that have done a lot of the research and a lot of the heavy lifting. And now, you know, some of the departments that are coming up, that are looking at it, they're looking at your data and, you know, like Dr. Marimana's out of San Antonio and what they're doing, as seeing it is possible, it is clinically significant, we could do this. So, you know, what would you say, or, you know, what kind of information have you found from a rural standpoint to say, this is something that rural medicine should be looking at as well? Now, we know it's not a one size fits all, of course. It doesn't work for every department. But, you know, to say that, you know, a rural department could do this, you know, you're proof that they could do this. So, you know, what would you say to that?
The biggest thing, I believe, is that we were able to prove the possibility of it being for people to be able to do it. Pardon. outside of that, when we look at rural trauma care, we have to first analyze, and each department is pretty different. We need to identify the rural trauma care gaps in your community. So what are your transport times? What is your access to air medical and more rapid transport? Where do your major traumas occur? And also, we have to look at another component that we found very surprising in the data, is that we see that almost 55 to 57% of our blood administrations are non-traumatic as well. So we see a lot of postpartum hemorrhage, GI bleeds, are also fall within this protocol. And we were able to extrapolate that this does have an impact on those patients as well. So we see as much impact on the non-acute trauma patient as we do any other patient population. But in reality, what we looked at, as an example, we do have a helicopter that's available to us, that's locally operated, and that we can actually transport to the helipad and eliminate all that pre-arrival time that often accompanies air medical. What we decided to do was not circumvent air medical, but complement it. When would blood be good to use? the days those helicopters are down for maintenance, weather, whatever that possibility of, you know, other calls, things like that. So most of our administrations had some component of helicopter inavailability in it as well. When you look at more rural counties, counties that have hour and 30 to 2 hour, 2.5 hour ground transports to trauma centers, blood then becomes vastly more critical for those communities. However, there is a downside to it, and that is cost. Many of those communities, just quite frankly speaking, in South Carolina, barely have enough money to support their operations to begin with. And
yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier about the, we have counties in the state of South Carolina that are currently not devoting a lot of funds to emergency medical services, and they're either using a contractor or something like that, where they're having wait times of, you know, an hour or an hour and a half to get a medic unit to a scene. And without devoting the funds, you know, to start to support the service, you would think that the same governmental body probably is not going to support a blood program because of its cost. And we've been fortunate to have a county council and administration that has been supportive financially of this program and of all of our efforts to go out and save lives. And, you know, it may not be the cheapest route to go, but, you know, it makes a difference for sure. And on in case by case, and for that one individual that, you know, is bleeding on the side of I-95 from a motor vehicle collision, they don't care what it costs. Right. And that's, I think our council has recognized that, and our administration has as well. And they financially supported it, and why it's put us in a position to be able to climb that steep mountain to implement this program.
And I've had conversations with our cohorts in other counties that have large, that actually are our neighbors, and that operate a large number of medic units. And even in those counties that they have 2 to 3 trauma centers available in those counties, sometimes we could only identify for them, out of the maybe 25 medic units that they have operating at any given time, only 1 to 2 of those medic units that blood would actually provide a benefit for those patients just because of their proximity. And it really kind of relies on what's your time away from your trauma centers, because the idea is that blood's not going to save their life. Obviously, we are in South Carolina, we have the blood program, we also have TXA available. And many departments are using both if they're going that direction. But providing that trauma surgeon a better patient to actually solve the traumatic injury, and a patient that's hemodynamically more stable, maybe even preventing airway procedures by doing hemodynamic stabilization. And, you know, we also adhere to damage control resuscitation techniques. So we allow for permissible hypotension, relying a lot on MAP or mean arterial pressures. And so a department really needs to identify all of those things that they can do even prior to beginning or even thinking about the blood component of resuscitation, and improve their overall trauma care, you know, warming patients, permissible hypotension, aggressive bleeding control techniques, things like that. And a lot of those departments, again, focusing on that first, and then adding the blood as the icing, so to speak, on the cake, they will see better outcomes in those patients. However, it is isolated to a small group of traumatic individuals, but in that case, that trauma patient doesn't care. And again, the administrators and the council and elected officials in those communities, they have to really, really sell that point to them, because they, you know, it is an expensive program to operate.
Right. Well, and to your point too, you know, this, we are always looking for the silver bullet, the, you know, the one thing that fixes everything. But, you know, this is just one more component of what would help, you know, larger percentage. You know, you talk about things like permissive hypotension or other, you know, avenues to care for patients. If those are done first, then, you know, what percentage of patients are vastly improved that wouldn't necessarily need the blood components? So, you know, it is a full cycle service. And, you know, as we're doing more research in EMS, we're finding out these things that there isn't a simple quick fix. You know, a tourniquet doesn't fix everything. Blood doesn't fix everything. You know, those type of things. Airway management, of course, where way back in the day, of course, I'm gray too. So, you know, I've been at it for a little while as well, where airway management was everything. You know, everything else, you know, was behind airway management. And we figured out that that wasn't necessarily the case as well. It's interesting, though, that you point out, and, you know, everybody starts to lean towards blood products for the trauma patients, but, you know, over 50% of your statistical data was showing that they were used in non-traumatic patients. So what's the impact on that side, the non-traumatic side?
Well, what we see in that, and I have to, again, defer to my colleagues up in Oconee, they had significant improvement in patient outcomes where postpartum hemorrhage being a large component of that and pre-surgical GI bleeding, that these patients were able to go into the surgery suite earlier. So there was no resuscitation measures needed upon arrival at the hospital. So they received that end point treatment earlier, and subsequently their 30, 60, and 90 day mortality rates went down, of course, but also length of stay in the hospital decreased significantly. And in that, when you look at healthcare as a whole in the community, length of stay in the hospital is really important because that impacts the community and the community's healthcare cost as well. So, you know, we might not see the benefit in a budget of that blood, but the community overall and the cost for healthcare in that community does see that by the decrease in hospital length of stay and in immediate treatment. And again, it's one of those things that everything with a program like this is a stair, you know, a stair moving forward. And that's the object that we're trying to get to. Again, you said it correctly when it's not a magic bullet, and there is many, many, many components that surround a program, a blood thought about. But when we're looking at things like reducing community healthcare costs, these things do provide an impact, and especially when these types of patients aren't necessarily going to specialty centers. They may be going to your local access hospitals that have the capability to mitigate these types of conditions. So it's extremely important in that aspect to us.
Yeah. One more example of things that pre-hospital medicine can do that impact healthcare as a whole. I mean, when we're talking about wait times or wall times where ambulances can't get out and patients are stacking up in the ER, you know, if we can do something in the field that, you know, drastically impacts, you know, those things as well, you know, we have a wonderful opportunity ahead of us. So you talked a little bit about costs and it being expensive, you know, and obviously this is something that it's difficult for an individual service to just step out on their own. So I would imagine that you guys had partnerships with this.
Well, correct. So no one in South Carolina, at least, had ever partnered with a third-party blood bank. And that was our partnership. That was the linchpin of our program in the Low Country is that we had to find a source of our product. And we were fortunate enough to make a phone call to a company called The Blood Connection. And when I give them the pitch, they immediately jumped on it. They saw it as a marketing opportunity and all the things that they, you know, that a corporation would, but they have been a great ally in it. They were at the meetings with us. They taught us how the storage logistics should work. You know, everything that we needed, they were there for. And it has been one of those long-term partnerships now that has just flourished. With other programs, and especially hospital-based programs that are out there, those logistics are a lot easier in the fact that a product is in facility and can be easily obtained. So you have those differences of, you know, where your product is coming from. We had partnerships with the trauma centers, obviously, initially trauma surgeons from both Medical University of South Carolina, Trident Medical Center, which are two primary trauma centers, and individual physicians in that were highly supportively critical, making sure we did everything the right way. And
yeah, I think that's an important point is, you know, Joey worked a long time on getting this through the state folks. And, you know, we say it took a long time and we did meet a lot of resistance, but it's not like we went to them and they just said, no, get out. You know, they were supportive of it and they wanted to implement it, but they had a lot of questions. They wanted it to be monitored. They, you know, so we had to work through those obstacles in order to get it implemented. But I think, you know, they were on board with it. They saw that it was possible and ultimately supported it as they kind of coached us along and what we needed to do to properly implement it.
And it goes back to the right way. You know, that was what I saw, is that it wasn't necessarily opposition, but opposition in the wrong way. Just making sure we were taking the right road with it. The South Carolina Nurses Association as well was highly supportive of it. So we had numerous partners where we needed them and support in that. State Med Control, Dr. Ed Deschamps, you know, one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. And he was, from day one, he said, let's get it done. And he did all that he could to get us the right resource, or get us in touch with the right resources and people we needed to talk to make this happen. So it wasn't a Colleton County effort. It wasn't an Oconee County effort or a Prisma effort. It was a state effort in this. When you really step back and look at it, there was a lot of people moving a lot of pieces around to get it done.
Yeah, and who would have thought, I mean, us starting our careers way back in the day, that we would have to have active partnerships with hospitals and state agencies. And, you know, it was just a matter of, oh, we thought, you know, an ambulance service takes care of people. That's what we do. You know, who knew that it would require so much for this? But to your point, you know, the important thing is that it's done well, and, you know, that it is a service, because, you know, when we do flash in the pan things and they don't go well, then it's just one more example of, ha, you guys shouldn't be doing this anyway. And then we're dismissed.
We've seen that occur so many times in our industry that we didn't want that either with this. And but thank goodness everything worked out. The data supported our position. You know, you talked about Texas, and we used a lot of their guidance on what they had already, you know, we definitely used them as a footing for a lot of the stuff we did with the STRAC data and the information coming out of South Texas at that time. And so, again, it was a really strong partnership with a lot of people that were moving a lot of pieces that made it what it is today.
And that's great. You know, the success that others have, we are able to build upon, and, you know, to the point that we talked about earlier, a lot of people thought blood and they instantly think trauma, but we're seeing that there's so many other things that come into play with this. And of course, again, everybody thought, well, big city has trauma because shootings and stabbings and car wrecks and those type of things. You know, why would rural EMS services need these type of resources? And while it is cost prohibitive at times, and, you know, there's a lot of partnerships that need to be assembled, seeing the benefit outweigh the cost in rural medicine really is, you know, one thing that that is kind of heralding these advances for sure. And you guys are great. You guys are now part of the foundation. You know, you're one more block showing that this is possible. It is relevant. It is, you know, a part of a service to the community that is needed. So, you know, this is a great win for rural medicine and, of course, for Carlton County.
Well, thank you. And again, it's not just us, it's everybody. And from our council, well, our citizens. Our citizens support it with the funding, our council allocating that, our administration, our county administration, our fire department administration. But I would be remiss without saying our providers are the ones that made it the success. And I will give them all of the credit, because just like anyone else in fire and EMS administration knows, we can have the greatest ideas on paper, but if our providers, our firefighters, our EMTs, AMTs, and paramedics don't go out there and execute, then those ideas really will fall by the wayside. So it's the people out there in the street doing the job that actually make these things a success. And those people having the buy-in from the beginning, providing the education to them that they need, the training, reoccurring training, but them just going out and doing it and really executing on a level that I can't describe. And so those folks are the heroes out there that made this happen more so than anybody.
Yeah, we have a lot of really talented, skilled, caring folks that work for Carlton County Fire Rescue. And as Joey said, they are literally where the metal meets the meat. They're providing this program. You know, Joey did a lot of work, and I mean a lot of work, to get it implemented. But, you know, without our providers, they're the ones that are out there actually saving people's lives. And that's really powerful to step back and look at sometimes. And we've had, you know, 20 years ago, or we had you mentioned earlier, the GSW patient that maybe we thought is not going to make it to a trauma center if we try to transport them there by ground. So we took them to maybe our local hospital who doesn't have, you know, a trauma surgeon on call, but maybe has blood that we can get to them. This new program, this blood program, is another tool that we can use to put some time back on the clock to be able to get them to the right facility. And our providers are the ones that recognize that, and they're the ones that are implementing that. And it's a powerful thing to witness for sure. And we're really happy about it.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for spending the day with me and talking about your newest program. We're looking for great things from Carlton County Fire and Rescue. And like I mentioned before, congratulations on being, you know, one more block in the foundation of what, you know, blood can mean to EMS in the United States, and especially to rural medicine.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. We appreciate the opportunity as well. And we thank GEMS and its partners for entertaining us to be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was good talking with you.
It was nice talking with you too. Thank you very much.